Welcome to Stone Ministries. We'd love to connect with you. Visit us online at stoneministries.org.au or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
In Proverbs it says that a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. What that simply means is that a good man thinks two generations ahead. A good man thinks two generations ahead, not just for the one that's coming, for the one that is to come. And I'll tell you why. If you change the way that you think, what it does, it creates longevity in your decision making. That you don't sacrifice the future for your present. My dad always taught me that. Don't do something stupid now that will affect your life in the long run. That was my dad's number one word of wisdom for me, because he knows how spontaneous I can be. Don't do something silly now that'll affect your life two generations down the line that you can't then take back. So when you look at it, we're going to talk about your family tonight. We're going to do something very prophetic, something that I believe can set the course and reset your family story. I was talking to a business consultant just recently, and he said this. He goes, if a company and an organization does not have a narrative, it will only last one generation. It means that if your organization, let's just take business for a moment, because usually we think, oh, that's just corporate. Think about it. If a company doesn't have a story that people believe in, it will last one generation. Do you know your beautiful Costco that only you have on the north side? See, we used to have our claim to fame was IKEA. Yeah. And then you're getting one of them too. Okay, so Costco has a 60-year plan. Did you know that? Every time they plan 60 years ahead. Every decision that they make, 60 years ahead. What will this decision now affect us 60 years from now? That's how they make decisions. So every time you have, see, you are not just a person that exists for your, let's be generous, 95 years on planet Earth, and then it's done. It's what you do right here and right now affects generations. You affect the whole world's timeline. Completely. And so therefore, we can't take for granted the story that we have to input into the world. Now, either it's going to be for positive or it's going to be for negative. Your story can bring joy to the world, or it can bring sadness to the world. It can bring generosity to the world or stinginess to the world. It can bring optimism or it can bring pessimism. Are you seeing where I'm going with this? So your story is important. But until you have a revelation of how important your story is, you won't build something for generations to come. God is a generational God. And so tonight, we're going to do something. I put it on Facebook for you to bring your pens and your paper. If you haven't got that, most of you have a phone that can, that's a smartphone, except for Keith Andrews, who I've seen his phone. But I know he'd bring pen and paper. So you've got a smartphone or you've got pen and paper, one of the two, and both will work. But by the end of tonight, I'm going to show you something that you can do for your children to come. And I believe it'll powerfully affect how you live so that you can be true to what you write to them. Okay, but we're not going to go there yet. God is a generational God. He spoke to Abraham and took him outside. And he said this. I shared this particular story on Mother's Day, but I'm going to recap it because it's part of the same legacy thought. Abraham is taken outside of his tent and the father says to him, Abraham, your family will look like that. And he goes, what do you mean my family's going to look like that? I don't even have one son yet. I don't have a child. My wife is barren. She cannot have children. But God said, you will have a family that looks like that. Anyway, he takes matters into his own hands, and we know how that turns out. So he has Ishmael, who's not a child of the promise, but is a child of Hagar, his maidservant. Then the child of promise comes through Sarah, his wife. And they call him Isaac. Anyway, years pass, and God asked Abraham to take Isaac up to an altar and sacrifice him. Now, no matter how spiritual you are, no matter how obedient you are to the Lord, that would not be nice. That's just not nice. I mean, we get upset when God asks us to give $10 more than what we thought, let alone our son. So here we have Abraham, a father of the faith, being asked to give up of his promise. So he takes Isaac up to the altar. And we've got to put this in cultural context, though. In Abraham's time, people sacrificed their children to appease the God that was up there. They were an agricultural society, so what they did was anything that made the God up there or the gods up there happy brought down rain so that they could eat, because the fields would get the water and therefore things would grow so they could eat, because if there was no water, there'd be drought and then everyone would die. So it was worth sacrificing one child to make sure all the rest lived. And you go, that's just horrible. But you got to think how they thought. Like, they didn't have Google. So they went, somebody's up there that commands the rain, that keeps us blessed down here. And if they get mad, I've got to give them something. Now, sometimes it was different things, but if it was really bad, they'd give up of their children, because that was all they had. That was their best. So in Abraham's mind, he's gone, this God is asking for my son. That's for my child. Okay, let's see what happens. Okay, so they go up there and Isaac's tied up and Abraham, with knife in hand, is about to plow down into his boy, and God stops him. And he stops him and gives him a lamb in the thicket. Now what you've got to see is not just the story of Abraham, and the story of Abraham is very powerful, but the story, the book, it's called, it's by Rabbi Joseph Telushkin. It's called The History of the Jews. And it says this, that the story is about Abraham, but it's more about God. It's more about God changing a way of thought so that normal could be changed forever. Because normal to Abraham was, well, here we go. And God says, no, I give you a lamb that changes the end of your story. I give you a lamb that changes the end of your story to oppose what you thought was normal. We have to realize that there is a lamb that has changed the end of our story, so our normal's not normal anymore. What God was saying was no more child sacrifice. No more child sacrifice. I refuse to let you kill the next generation based on the altar of your normal. So have we ever had a thought, a process, a way that we build, a way that we speak, a way that we invest, a way that we think that family should look like, that's our normal, but actually it sacrifices the next generation? Do we have Christian sayings? Really? Do we have Christian sayings like, God made you sick because he tried to teach you a lesson? That actually, that's normal for us. I can tell you, I know at least 5 people that have used that line. Just flippantly, like, oh, you know, it was the Lord. He was teaching you something. Because every time I have a cold, I got it from God because he sneezed on me. All right, so here we have a normal thought, but what it does, it is sacrifices the next generation upon the altar of our normal. Is this making sense to everybody? So we have to be willing to move with the story of God and embrace the fact that the end of the story does end well because a lamb has changed the end of the story. This is Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans and that I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, to give you a future and a hope. What was the word? Future and hope. Future and hope. Which means that because a lamb has changed the end of our story, every day when you get up and think about your family and the family that is to come, God is giving them a future and a hope. Your story doesn't end badly because a lamb has already changed it. So tonight we're going to go on a journey because we're going to speak life and hope into the generations to come. I refuse to listen to people that say, well, you know, the world's the devil, it's gone now. Hold on a second. I thought Jesus did all of that stuff. And we're called to bring heaven to earth. We actually have a very victorious eschatology. And if you don't understand what that means, don't worry about it. But for those that do, you don't have to watch the movie. Oh, don't worry about it. What I'm saying is this, is you have to realize deep down that Jesus either won or he didn't. And at the end of the story, a lamb has already changed it. And if we agree with a fatalistic thought, this is what I know we do. We speak death into the next generation every time. You go, well, look at all the bad stuff. I see it all over TV. By the time there were four people on planet Earth, the murder rate was 25%. That was just in the first family. The murder rate in Australia is not 25%. Is it? No. So what does it mean? You know, there's less diseases now on planet Earth than there were 50 years ago. We have to believe that God is doing something powerfully right here, right now, creating the world and putting heaven and earth in us to bring heaven to earth right here, right now. So when I speak to my grandchildren and prophesy over them, I'm not speaking, you better go get your bunkers and your baked beans. But no, I'm going to prophesy life into them. I'm going to prophesy that they'd be people of influence and significance in the world, that they can bring heaven to earth. They can bring the gospel of Jesus Christ everywhere that they go. I'm not going to be prophesying, putting money away so they can hide underneath eating baked beans in a close confinement with everybody. Because that's hell anyway. Baked beans and with people all confined. Come on. God has given you a future and a hope. So that you can live victoriously. Like Pastor Alan said this morning, every other world system was placed under the feet of Jesus. We have to believe that to prophesy well into the next generation. You believe that? Okay, let's go. Let me bring the first slide up. Thanks. It's in Psalm 105, verse 8. He remembers his covenant forever, the promise he made for 1,000 generations. 1,000 generations. That's not like that's not 1,000 years. That's 1,000 generations. At minimum, it's 40,000 years. 40,000 years. That means you and I were included in it. That means your great, 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 great grandbabies were included in it. That there is a blessing that I can carry and steward for my great-great-grandchildren. See, when our minds shift into there, we change the way that we behave and build here and now. Because when you think the story ends badly, you build differently. You build very selfishly, to be honest. I know people that for 20 years never worked a day in their life because they didn't want to miss if Jesus came back. For 20 years. He had to go get a job eventually. What I'm saying is how you think about the end of the story affects how you build here and now. Because there is a blessing for 1,000 generations. And I don't want my thinking because of booklets to remove that way of life from the blessing. Pope Francis said this, if we act like children of God, knowing that he loves us, our lives will be made new, filled with serenity and joy. Being like a child fills us. See, I got to trust that daddy has everything under control. I have to trust that when he said, I've given you a future and a hope, he really meant it. And that he would make room for my whole family line and for your family line to sit and receive something that you don't need to worry about. Something that you say, I have lined myself up. I have received the fullness and now I prophesy into my babies and their babies to come that they are going to be blessed, that they are going to have life and life in abundance. That is a picture of my dad with little fat Isaiah. Some of you don't, you know, Isaiah doesn't usually come on a Sunday night, so you don't see him. That was him like at 7 months or 8 months or something. He doesn't look like that now, but this picture means heaps to me, and it's a cute picture, but the depth of it shows me something that I had never felt before until this part of our life or our story came about. When Isaiah was 6 months old, we'd asked my dad to and mum to babysit him. We had a birthday party to go to. And mum and dad came over as per normal. They're loving, doting grandparents. Most of you have seen that. But they came over, and in the middle of the night, as they were, it would have been about 9:30 at night, my dad said to my mum, now we weren't there, but this is the story I know, that my dad said to my mum, I don't feel so good, I'm going to go lie down. So he went to lie down, and in the midst of him lying down, he rolled over, and with every part of strength that he had left, he said, Juliana, call me an ambulance. So they call an ambulance. Now at this point, I'm getting a phone call from my mum at the birthday party. Now, I just assumed when I saw the phone ring that Isaiah wasn't going to sleep. And she was trying to figure out a way to keep him up. That's what I thought in my head. Anyway, I get this phone call and I answer it and mum goes, come home now, I've just called an ambulance for your father. So we get in the car. I can't even remember the trip home, to be honest. We get there, the ambulance is at the front of our house and everything. Dad's on the stretcher in the back and whatever else, and mum's now in the ambulance and they're all going. Dad looks as pale as pale could be, looked lifeless. I didn't know what was going on. I'm going getting on the phone to Dave going, I'm just letting you know this is what happened. Anyway, they go off to the hospital. I'm sitting there at the front of my house going, what just happened? We're all freaking out. We don't know what's going on. Mum calls us from the hospital about an hour later saying your dad had a heart attack. That's what they've diagnosed it as, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, time goes on and then we see him in the hospital and dad had to have... Now, it wasn't a triple bypass, but they had to do 5 bypasses. So it was pretty bad. And he's way better now, obviously. You've seen him. He's doing well. He eats healthy. He's got a Nutribullet. He's doing really well. He's so healthy. I spoke to the nurses when I went into ICU and they talked about what was going to happen. And they said, your dad will have, he'll be 20 years younger on the inside. And I thought, amen. Well, anyway, one of the first trips I had to do of the next year was, the trip after, he had the heart attack, he got well. And he was driving me to the airport one time. And I don't know how we got on the topic, but he was talking about that night when he got sick. And he said, you know, when I fell off the couch onto my knees and I was holding my chest, he said, you know that I love you. And I went, yeah, of course I know that you love me. Growing up, I used to tell everybody I was dad's favorite. No, seriously. I was like, he loves me more than mum and everything. No, I was convinced I was dad's favorite. I now have Isaiah and Elizabeth, and I'm not convinced anymore. Okay, but he's telling me, he goes, you know I love you? I said, yes. He said, you know I love your mom? And I'm like, yeah, where is this going? He goes, you know I love your brother? I said, absolutely. He said, but you need to know something. He said, when I fell down and I thought I was going to die, he said, and I was clutching my chest, he said, the only prayer that I could get out was, Lord, let me see my grandchildren grow up. He said, that was it. He goes, that was the motivating factor for me not to go right there and then. That I had a 6-month-old grandson in the next room and I refused to die because I wanted to see him grow up. Isaiah has no idea. But he doesn't realize that a 6-month-old Isaiah saved granddaddy's life. When I talk about multi-generations and prophesying into the future, we're going to be doing things that we don't fully understand. That the next generation doesn't fully understand. See, when I look at this picture here, that's my dad healthy. What Isaiah, who's sitting on granddad's shoulders or papa's shoulders, doesn't realize is that he saved papa's life. This blessing goes both ways. This is a broken iPad. Has anybody ever seen somebody with a broken screen? Some people have broken screens in this room that I've seen. And I've got lots of friends that have broken it, I don't know, numerous times because they drop it here, they drop it there. One time it fell in a port-a-loo and it was never coming back. Okay? But what I'm saying is they just lost phones. But one of the most common things I see is broken screens. And this is something I was talking to Joss Wilson the other day, and her iPad has like a broken screen on it. And I said, What do you do with it? Like, how do you see? And I'm like, what happened? And she's like, someone was playing Fruit Ninja on it, and so it wasn't me, and it just broke. And I went, wow. I said, okay, how can you stand looking at it? Because I can't handle anything. Like, I got a scratch on my phone cover once, and I had to change it. Like, I couldn't handle looking at it, right? So I asked her, I said, how do you look through that? How do you see anything? She goes, well, you just get used to seeing past it. Hey, can I ask you a question? Do we just get used to looking through brokenness and we change the way that our sight looks, that we accept an inferior screen because we've learned to look past it? Have we learned that brokenness is normal? So that we can just see past it? Do we raise our kids to say, well, that's just how we do things? Well, that's just Arnie so-and-so. She's always been like that. That's all through our family. Oh, you know, oh, that sickness? Yeah, that's hereditary. That comes through our family. Have we gotten used to speaking like that? That we get used to looking at a screen that's broken and we just learn to choose to see and train our eyes to look through the inferior? Has our filter been shattered and we got so used to it we didn't even realize it? When my dad was growing up, my grandfather was in the English military. He was in the British military. That's why I have the surname Stone. My grandfather was British. And he was an expert marksman. He was an engineer in the British Army, and he was an amazing man. He was very smart. He was very detailed. He was a good man, but he had a drinking problem. And my dad tells me the story of when he was about 8 years old, and his dad used to go away and come back, and I guess alcohol was his coping mechanism. But so he wasn't a bad man. He was just a very disillusioned man, or you know, he couldn't see right. Broke the screen broke, so he got used to it. Anyway, one time he'd come back and my dad was at home. He was about 8 years old, and my grandfather had come through the house, and he was in essence he was just drunk. And he came through and he was moving some things around and kind of getting a little bit rowdy in the house. And my grandmother got up and confronted him of what he was doing. And because he was already riled up, there was about to be a violent exchange. Or could be. It looked like there was going to be a violent exchange. My dad, being 8 years old, got up and stood between my grandmother and my grandfather with his fist up to his father, so my granddad, saying, "You will not touch her," with tears streaming down his face. He said, "You will not touch her." When my dad tells this story, he says it was at that very moment that he said, "For me to live well, I have to choose not to be my father." It was at that moment that he hit the legacy reset button. Each one of us has a moment where we have to hit the legacy reset button, or we're the beneficiaries of someone else hitting the legacy reset button. What Isaiah doesn't realize, even though he saved Papa's life, was that an 8-year-old Ian Stone saved his life. You see the power of generations? You see the power of maybe a praying grandmother? Of a grandmother or grandfather that stood his ground, that opposed the normal and said, "I refuse to believe that's normal because a lamb has changed the end of my story. I refuse to look through this screen that's broken and accept it that because I just got used to seeing past it. You and I were designed and destined to be whole. Not to accept the inferior because it became our normal. Come on, I know somebody and he's going, yes, that's me. You were destined for greatness. You were destined for victory. You were destined to be the head and not the tail. Just because somebody gave you an inferior normal doesn't make it right. That's why when I speak to leaders, when I speak to anybody anywhere, that one of the most confusing and frustrating things is hearing somebody say that wants to change, well, that's just how we've always done it. But if that's how you've always done it, but you want change, and you're doing the same thing, that's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. So sometimes we have to look at the brokenness and see it and then say, I am going to the person, I'm going to the God that can make me whole. Not just me, but my whole family line. My challenge is this: do we get so used to the brokenness that the next generation grows up thinking that it is normal to look through the cracks in the screen? It's time for a legacy reset. I know tonight some people are going to leave changed and refuse to be the people that they once were before. I know that tonight, maybe you're the beneficiary of someone else hitting the legacy reset button like I am. I am living well today, not because my dad's a great dad, but not because he just raised me well, but because at 8 years old, he made a decision. At 8 years old, Andrew, 30 years old, is the beneficiary of an eight-year-old Ian Stone. Do you see how a multi-generational blessing works now? That the choice of an eight-year-old affected generations to come. Because I know my grandbabies, Isaiah's children, Elizabeth's children, will one day say, thank you, great-granddad, for your eight-year-old self making a decision. Not to perpetuate a broken normal. This is the brain size of 2-3-year-old children. One on the left is a normal brain. The one on the right is of extreme neglect. The one on the left was of children growing up in a home where they were encouraged, where they were loved, where they were disciplined, but not abusively, but they were disciplined, they were loved, they were encouraged, they felt they belonged. That's the left. The extreme neglect comes from a group of children that have grown up with rejection, that have grown up being told that they're not good enough, being constantly living in fear. If this doesn't just have a spiritual effect on you, that's the brain size. That's development. Left loved, right unloved. Can you see this? We have a physical, natural responsibility to speak life into the next generation because it literally affects their brain development. Like literally. So you and I, every day when we see young children, this is not about we never say no to them. This is about speaking life, even if we have to speak to their potential on the inside. Because at some point, each one of us was stupid. If we really get down to it, at some point, we were doing something stupid. And someone saw beyond the stupidity and saw our potential to be great, to be loved, something that was worth loving. And when I say stupid, I mean you were doing something that was inferior to your design. No one was a born loser, ever. We only lose when we choose to agree with something or circumstances that are inferior to our design. Does that make sense? When we agree with a lie that says brokenness is normal. When we agree with a lie that says, are you sure Jesus really did it all? Are you sure he forgave that sin? Dr. Carolyn Leaf says this: your thoughts affect yourself, the people in your current generations, and the next four generations after you. Your thoughts. And this is why, because your thoughts build, your thoughts plan, your thoughts create. Therefore, what you build, plan, create doesn't just affect you, but the four generations that come after you. There's three kinds of people. One, people who never build anything or leave an inheritance for the next generation. Two, people who hit the reset button on their legacy. People who choose to not perpetuate the story given to them. Number one is someone like my grandfather. Like I said, wasn't a bad man, but he just didn't build. He was living in the now all the time. We call number one, seedless watermelon. Number one means you enjoy it for the moment, but you don't build anything for the next generation. Those are the kind of people that on the back of their caravan just said, we spent our children's inheritance. Number two is people who hit the reset button like my father. Number three are people who are the beneficiaries of someone else resetting the legacy, and their responsibility is to perpetuate the story given to them. Everybody say the word responsibility. We don't usually like that word. But I see it this way, through the filter of grace. This is not works, but it's a response to his ability. Does that make sense? It's a response to his ability. So I respond to his ability because he set me up to succeed. And now I respond to that ability and therefore perpetuate that story. In 1 Chronicles 22:5, David said, my son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house that is to be built for the Lord shall be exceedingly magnificent, famous, and glorious throughout all the lands. Therefore now I will make preparation for it. So David made ample preparations before his death. So David could see. Remember, David is a man after God's own heart. He said, my son will build something that is glorious. That is what he's in essence, if I read between the lines, is what he's saying. He will build something bigger than me. If I truly believe that I am the greatest in my family line and no one will ever be able to supersede the building of Andrew Stone, I have sentenced my family to a slow, painful death. David says, my son Solomon shall do greater than what I did. But he is young and inexperienced. The next generation doesn't know it all. They might think they do, but they don't. But what does David do? He doesn't go and tell him, you are young and inexperienced. I am going to do this and I'm going to do this to you. And you know, really make it this horrible experience. What does he do? He says, hey, don't worry about it. It's going to be great. I will. Look at what his words. I will make preparation for it. Simply, I will make room for his greatness. I will make room for him to succeed where even I can't cross that line yet. But I can make room for it. There are nations. I've got time to tell this story. Let me tell you this story. Right at the beginning of our ministry, when we were traveling, it was called Andrew Stone Ministries. About a year into it, Ali kept challenging me, going, I don't know about that name. And me being a little bit stubborn, she's just as stubborn, but me being stubborn in that moment, said, oh, I don't know. You know, that's just how people do things. Remember, normal. I mean, like if you go out and travel, well, what do? You just take your name and you put ministries at the end of it. Everybody else does it. Correct? Now, I'm not saying that's bad. This is my experience, okay? So about a year into it, I'm getting this thought on legacy. It's stirring up in me. What am I doing for my kids? That I'll tell you right now that when we have children or even spiritual sons, I'm not talking they have to be natural children. I'm talking people that you see potential in that you want to cover and build for. So this might not be physical children. It might be spiritual children. It could be nieces or nephews. It could be even a school. It could be a town. It could be a community. Is everybody getting that? It doesn't have to be physical, your DNA, but people that you carry something for. And I remember going through this legacy thought process over and over, and I felt like I needed to drop my name off the front. So it wasn't Andrew Stone Ministries anymore. It was Stone Ministries. I just cut my name off because I realized that Isaiah growing up may not want to run a ministry called Andrew Stone Ministries. What I had done, I had named it in an inferior way because I thought it was normal. What I did was I prophetically cut it off from the next generation. Can you see what I've done? And I had this moment encounter with God where I named it Andrew Stone Ministries, and every time I went somewhere, it was saying in the spirit realm over and over and over again, whatever I do right here, right now is only for one generation. So when I cut my name off the front and I called it Stone Ministries, everywhere that I go now, or anywhere that I used to travel, what I was saying was this: I'm here right now. But if I don't get everything, my son's coming back. That you better watch yourself over this territory, because Stone Ministries is here and it's not just me. That when I stepped into a place and into a territory, they went, oh my goodness, that whole family line's going to get us. Even the family line that wasn't in the natural yet. Because I took the inferior normal way of thought and I said, I refuse to agree with normal because I want to be a revolutionary. Revolutionaries never agree with normal. That's the point. Because if you agree with normal, you'll be normal. So here we have, every time I went somewhere, I would say, this is for my grandchildren. May they have an inheritance here. I have a big world map. I ordered it from Perth, from Fremantle, which is like, you know, port side here, right? And it's really cool. Fremantle's just a cool place. And I went to this this boat shop or shipping shop. And it's this huge, huge map. I don't even have a wall big enough in my house for it. Because I thought the bigger the better, I'll just take the big one of that. Right? And it came to my house in this tube that's huge. And I'm like, I don't know where to put it. It would cost me like $1,000 to frame it or more. So I'm like, I don't know what to do with it. But I originally bought it for this. I've got to build a big house so I can put that thing up. I'm going to design a room around that mat. But this is what I kept looking at it. Every time I bought it, I said this: there will come a time in my lifetime when I will be able to close my eyes and throw a dart at that map. And wherever it lands, I'll be able to say to one of my lineage, you can have it. You go, Andrew, that's arrogant. No, it's my inheritance. You choose what you get. I mean, look, if God's called you one nation, well, amen. And I don't think I'm called to all nations either. But at least I would be able to say, I know somebody, I'll go to my granddaughter, I'll go, baby, if you want something, if you see it, if God has put a nation on your heart, granddad set something up, at least one connection to make room for you, because David said, I will make ample preparation for it. I have to make ample preparation for the success of my children to come. My version. As Andrew said, my son Isaiah and daughter Elizabeth are young and inexperienced, and their purpose and divine assignment that is to be built for the Lord shall be exceedingly magnificent, famous, and glorious throughout all lands. Therefore, now I'll make preparation for it. So Andrew made ample preparations before his death, which was a long time away. Long time away. For you guys that don't have kids yet, if you build like here now, imagine what you will be like when you're older and you have your children around you or your spiritual kids around you. When you go to the city that you feel called to and you walk into that land and you look at the children there and you go, I have created room for you to succeed in this planet. Hope you can feel the weight of what I'm trying to say. In 1 Chronicles 22, 14 to 16, it says this. Now behold, with great pains, eating a watermelon with seed. You know what? I don't think I'll forget that till the day I die. That's going to be a story that I pass down through the family line now, Alan said. Now behold, with great pains, sacrifice, I have prepared for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold and 1,000,000 talents of silver and bronze and iron beyond weight. Bronze and iron beyond weight, and they are in great quantity. Also timber and stone I have prepared, and you may add to them. This is David preparing for Solomon. That's 1,000,000 talents of silver. 100,000 talents of gold. Moreover, there are many workmen with you. Okay, we got to catch this. It is not just about physical inheritance. It is about setting them up with favor with people. It is about creating relationships that when you are gone, that there are relationships that you have built and atmospheres that you have created so that your grandchildren and your children can walk in favor with man because of what you created with people. Workmen, simply meaning we have a dream for our children and our children have a dream and we make relationships for people to go, I want to serve that dream. I'm going to build relationship with this family so I can build this dream and vice versa. It's not just about serving my dream. Corporate vision makes room for personal vision, and personal vision is achieved through corporate vision. We do this better together, simply put. Stonecutters and masons of stone and carpenters and all men who are skillful in every kind of work, of the gold, the silver, and the bronze, and the iron, there is no limit. Arise and work, and may the Lord be with you. This is called restful increase. Notice it says right there, arise and work. But notice what he's working from, not what he's working for. He's not working for the gold and the silver and the iron and the bronze and the workmen. David said, it's already yours. Now arise and work. Calculation, let's do a little bit of math. 100,000 talents of gold, this is of this afternoon. 100,000 talents of gold equals 3.4 million kilograms. Gold price per kilogram is $43,000. I'm rounding, obviously. Therefore, the total gold is about $147 billion. David was a man after God's own heart. Look what he left for his son. Silver. 1,000,000 talents of silver is about 34 million kilograms. Silver price per kilo was $688, like I said, of this afternoon. Total silver was $23.5 billion. You add it up, just gold and silver, not land, not iron, not bronze. That was beyond weight. He gave him an inheritance of $171 billion. $171 billion. If we took it today, if David said to Solomon today, he would literally go and say, here is $171 billion. Go build what God has told you to build. It's pretty good, huh? Now, if David was a man after God's own heart, and he was under the old covenant, and David looks at us and goes, man, I wish I was you. What have we been called to give and build and make ample preparation for in the next generation? He said, I will make ample preparation for him. And that was it. Actually, that was not even all of it. That was some of it. See, when you're wowed by that, you go, surely I have to think bigger than my normal. Surely I have to think bigger than my screen that I got used to the cracks so I looked beyond it. Because I had to maneuver myself to see through the cracks, but you get used to maneuvering through an inferior normal because it becomes habit. Until somebody hits the legacy reset, you'll just perpetuate the same over and over and over again. I am sure that everybody in this room wants something better for the generations to come than what they've been given now. you and I live in one of the greatest days of history. We do. We live in one of the greatest times in history to make a mark and bring heaven to earth, not just for here right now, but for the generations to come. In 1 Kings 13, 1-3, "And behold, there came a man of God out of Judah by the word of the Lord to Bethel. Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. The man cried against the altar by the word of the Lord, 'O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a son shall be born to the house of David.'" So an accident, that's the house of David. "Josiah by name." Okay, this is going to just blow your mind. This was 300 years before Josiah was born. This wasn't, "There's going to come a son by the house of David, and then just keep, then miss it, and on you shall he offer the priest." No. He said Josiah by name. Now it's fulfilled in 2 Kings. Because they find the book and Josiah reads it. Now, in 2 Kings, Josiah opens it up and he reads it. And it catapults him into such an identity realization that he becomes the king that he's called to become. Because he realized that 300 years, oh, I can feel it right now, 300 years before he was born, someone had written his name in a book and prophesied greatness over him. What are we prophesying? I want my kids to grow up and get letters, and grandbabies that I never see get letters from me saying that they were designed to be great and that I had enough spiritual insight to prophesy over them right now, so that when they read it, they get an identity realization that they were called and born, designed and destined for more. Do you realize that this is old covenant? These people had the Holy Ghost come on them, not live in them. What can we do now? That's what I'm trying to bring. What could we do now? What could we name our, like, 300 years? Let's not jump that far. Let's go two generations. Could you write to your great grandchildren? Well, we're going to do it in a second. But the point is this, is do we have enough insight and depth in what, how we think and what we believe to have the spiritual guts to prophesy to our great grandbabies? Based on calculation, I should be able to get my hands to, on at least one of them if my kids do what I tell them to do. I should be able to get my hands on at least one of them, one of my great-grandbabies. And I said to Allie the other day, I said, when I get my hands on that great-grandbaby, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to bless it with everything in me if that's the last thing I do. Because this message, this legacy revelation has changed my life forever. Because I don't build for me now. I enjoy what I do, but I will never sacrifice my legacy for being comfortable. I won't sacrifice my legacy to be a people pleaser either. Because either I can have people crying at my door, or I can have my grandchildren crying at the grave, not tears of sadness, but tears of anger, saying, "You should have done something for us." Not everybody else. Come on. You weren't designed to please everybody, so give it up. If you try to please everybody, you're not going to please anyone. Especially yourself. I don't ever want my grandchildren to come up to me and go, "Granddad, you've never spent time with us. You built nothing for us, but you built everything for everybody else." Remember, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, not for everybody. Or little pieces here and there. Can you see my heart here? Like, take it within context. I'm saying be generous, build for people. But you know what? Your grandbabies need something from you. Your great-grandchildren, be it spiritual, be it physical. We're called to build for somebody and a group of people, our family line, way beyond our lifetime. Oh. Let me go here. Let me show you something. This is pretty cool. When I was, here we go. When I was doing a school camp, they're about 15 years old, most of them. Actually, sorry, that was a youth camp. They're about 15 years old. I've done this a couple of times in different places. One of them was a school camp where grade 12ers were there. Dave, my brother, was with me. He did the worship for this particular school camp, and we spoke together and stuff. It was a lot of fun. And what we did was, on the last night, was we got them to write notes to their great-grandchildren. Now, we got that super spiritual idea in the car on the way over. I thought, you know what? We need to end this thing with, like, wow. So let's get them to do something prophetic. Like, tonight is actually going to be really, really prophetic. It's just going to be differently prophetic. Every time you see prophetic, it doesn't have to look the same. Because everyone could line up and we could all get words for you and lay you out and whatnot. But you know what? Maybe it's time you prophesied over your family. That's just being honest. Maybe it's not time for you to get a word from somebody else for your family. It's time for you to get a word for your family and prophesy into their future. So anyway, we were there and I got this 15-year-old kid came up to me and goes, do you mind, is it okay what I wrote? He wanted to check. And so what I did was I gave them four frameworks. In essence, these are not rules, these are more guidelines. It says this: what would you want them to know about you, and is it true? If you were not an astronaut, don't tell them that. Would you be proud of your story? Most, like in some cases, you probably won't see your great-grandchildren or, you know, your great-great-grandchildren. But imagine you're not meeting them and all they have is this note from you. How powerful would it have been on your 21st birthday, if you've had your 21st birthday, to get a box full of letters from your great-granddad prophesying into your life? Can you imagine opening that, even if it was one letter? Imagine opening the box from your parents saying, your great-granddad wrote this for you before you were ever even thought of. And he saved it, and he said no one was to open it until your 21st birthday. Whoa. Can you imagine when when that daughter or son opened that letter, what it would feel like when they read the words? That would carry more power than just getting an encouraging word. That would carry power outside of time. So they wrote notes, and would you be proud of your story? Would they want to be like you? See, I know that my dad did something. The saddest thing that you can ever have in your family line is people saying, for me to be successful, I have to choose not to be them. In order for me to be good, I'm not going to be like granddad, or I'm not going to be like grandma. And here, what would you want to say to them? What would you want to say? What would you want to speak into their life? This is one of the kids that wrote, he's 15 years old. All right, check this out. To my dearest great-grandchildren, I have written this letter to you to let you know how much I love you. And at this time, I do not know your name, your personality, or your appearance. But I know that our Father in heaven does and is making plans for you even now. At this time, I am 15 years old. I am walking strongly with God and am in absolute awe of His glory and His presence. In my life, I've had many struggles, including self-esteem, anger, and feeling unworthy of God's love. Many of these problems are in direct relation to my earthly father, your great-great-granddad. This is because my whole life I've been afraid to approach him about problems because I feared he would not care, and I am constantly trying to win over his love and respect for me. This is not to say that he does not love me. It's just very hard to see it, and that affected the way I used to view God. However, I have come now to see who God truly is and how He loves me unconditionally. Understanding His love has helped me forgive my earthly dad. My life as it now stands is to completely change my legacy and forever change the circumstances of your life. Okay, this is 15. The legacy I leave will be of love, trust, hope, and obedience towards God, and I hope that your very lives will be the same and you will serve God and live completely for Him. I want you to know that even now I'm praying for you and the way and your future wife or husband, and I live and raise our, and I will live and raise our kids to set up promises, values that are molded around Christ's love for you. I know he has amazing, amazing plans for your life, and I pray that you know who I am, but I am certain his plans for you are even greater, and I feel strongly, this is where he gets prophetic, I feel strongly a call of worship on your life. God has called you to play for him and lead others into the Holy of Holies. I love you so much. See you in heaven from your great-granddad. There's something when I listen to these kids write these letters, when they come up to me and show me, because I asked, I said, some of you, would you mind showing me what you wrote? They'd come up to me and they'd show me this little A5, and I just asked them for a note, not a letter. And they're writing like crazy. They're going, sir, can I have another piece of paper? I want it to be neat. So they come back, get another piece of paper, and they're writing, writing, and they're flipping over the paper, and they're writing, writing, writing. You know one thing I noticed across every single one? None of them signed their name at the bottom. They all signed your great-great-grandma or your great-granddad. They didn't sign their name because they signed their relationship. What could we do? If I could have the musicians up, please. We're just going to spend some time right now, if you don't mind, is that the musicians are going to play. And I thought we might make a start on writing to our great-grandchildren. This is highly prophetic. It's not just that, it's just a note. Put it into context. If they were to open it on their 18th birthday or their 21st birthday, what would you want to tell them? What would you want to show them? What would you want them to know about you? Would you be proud of your story? This is, you don't have to do this. But I thought we'd give at least 5 minutes to taking the time to at least start. And this is what I can promise you. Once you start, you'll be like, Andrew, give us more time. Because you will start and the spirit in you will start prophesying. And it'll start leaping in you, going, this is what I want them to know. This is what I want them to believe. This is what I want them to walk into. This is what I want them to know I made room for. And as you start prophesying and writing, you will go, oh my goodness, I got to do this more often. Let's just play How He Loves Us. But take some time right now. You can get your phone out. You can get your piece of paper out. We can do it. I'm going to leave the questions up there for a moment. You know, I just appreciate you allowing me to speak this heavily into your life. You never, ever have to do anything that I say. Ever. But I'm at least hoping that it would give you something that you can walk away with and say, I learned something today. Or I can put 10% of what Andrew said into my life and I'll see how it goes. Start somewhere. If you start with 3 lines, start there. But come on, let's write together. What does it look like? Dearest great-grandchildren, could it be a great-grandson? Could it be a great-granddaughter? What are you going to write over them? What do you want to say to them? What do you want to say to them? Does something leap in you when you think about it? Are they going to be great communicators? Are they going to be great business people? Are they going to be people of character and integrity? As you're writing, realize this, that when they read it, they will have a revelation of who they're created to be. But as you're writing it, realize this, as you're writing it, it puts the responsibility on you to be the person that they're reading it from. Just a few more minutes. I'm not going to ask anybody to come out the front and read it. But I do want to start something in our church, something in our Bridgeman life that goes beyond Bridgeman life, that goes beyond our 90 years on the planet.
We hope you've been blessed by this teaching. We'd love to connect with you. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.